Hi, welcome to Adulting with Ebony, the weekly podcast where my guests and I explore what it means and takes to be a kick-ass and kind adult these days. Expect deep, real and raw, as no topic is out of bounds. We want lives and businesses that are profitable, sustainable and fun. We want lives that feel as good on the inside as they perhaps look on the outside. And that means adulting the fuck up. I'm Ebony Allard. I'm an award-winning coach, author, and speaker. And if you're ready to implement, go to n2n365.club. For now, though, let's get on with the show. Hey, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of Adulting with Ebony. Today, I'm joined by Michael Maisie, author of Young Offender, founder of the CIP Project, sober for 12 years, dad to two daughters, and an incredible man whose story really touched me, actually. And I want to get into that in great detail with you, because there's some parts of it that are a little bit in parallel to mine and bits that really, really aren't. And I wanted to talk about all of that with you. But I wanted to start by asking, what does adulting mean to you?
I guess it's doing all the things that you do when you're an adult, like pay bills and be responsible and be of service to others. You know, I'm the eldest of all my brothers and sisters. I got 3 from my mum and 15 from my dad. So that was like the first port of call, was being in service to them. And then when I got sober and I set up a business, then you're in service to your employees. And then in service to your family. I've got a wife and 2 kids now. And, you know, I think once you've sort of got all of that in order, then it's about being in service to your community, the people who are still suffering. So I think adulting for me is all about service.
Do you think you can do any of that? I agree wholeheartedly, by the way. But do you think you can do any of that if you're not first in service to yourself?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, self-care is a part of it. Yeah, self-care, daily self-care. You know, I'm responsible for my emotions. That's what I aim for, is emotional responsibility, which means I'm responsible for my happiness. So I have to do things that contribute towards my own happiness, you know. And often it's not easy, because the things that make me happy, the thought of doing them aren't very appealing sometimes, like going out for a run, or, you know, not eating loads of chocolate, you know, because in my mind I'm like, that chocolate is going to make me happy, you know. Yeah. But it's like, and when I think of running, my mind is like, I don't want to go out when it's raining and windy and run, but I have to sort of focus on how I will feel when the process is finished, not how I'll feel immediately.
I want to unpack that with you, because I still have moments where all of the things that I used to do for fun are not available for me anymore, because they're not in service of me, they're not in service of anything, right? And sometimes, like, this responsibility piece, the kind of adulting piece, can feel really, really fucking boring. And, like, you know, I have to go for a run, or I have to meditate, or I have to do yoga, or I have to eat clean. And I'm like, I don't, but there is a tiny piece of me that misses the party girl, that misses the cocaine, that misses the, like, just getting out of my head and not being responsible for anyone and anything. And yet, you know, I would never go down that road, because even the tiniest step in that direction doesn't actually feel good anymore. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder whether you can connect to that at all. Like, sometimes I'm stuck in this tiny place where I'm like, I just want to have some fun without being responsible all of the time. Do you connect with that?
Mm. Oh, I really relate. I really relate to that dilemma. And, you know, it was interesting the language you used. I have to run. I have to meditate. I have to eat well. And it was an interesting point when I got, I think I was about 7 years sober, and I had to change my whole language. Mm. what I decided to say was, is that I like to feel happy.
Yeah.
So I choose to meditate.
Yeah.
And I like to feel happy. So I making a choice that I am going to run because I like to feel good. And the simple switch of the language, and then the power came back to me then. It was like I had a choice in it. Whereas before, I had the same thing. Oh, I must meditate and I must eat well and I must exercise. And then I become the prisoner of my own well-being. It's like, if I don't do this stuff, I'm not allowed to feel good. And what I've found in the middle of all of this stuff is you come back to this thing where I have to just allow myself some space to not have it perfect all the time. You know, and I think I spent a long time in my life, and I think people in recovery certainly do, where we carry a lot of shame for the things we've done wrong, shame for our behavior, shame that's passed down ancestrally to us from our primary caregivers. And for me, it's all about just lifting this shame. Like, you know, we're not perfect, but, you know, we're amongst a group of people in the world. There's people who are light workers who are trying to improve themselves and improve the planet. And I think if you're doing that, then cut yourself some slack and just, you know, we're human. We're not going to get it perfect. I'm not going to get it perfect, you know, and that's all right.
I totally agree. And what for me is really interesting is like my have to was kind of mirroring the have to and the must that you were also saying in the beginning of the conversation. Mm-hmm. And for me, like, it is the daily practice to stay empowered, to look at where I'm leaking my power and what my need is underneath that. Because if I'm in that place where I'm feeling where my inner rebel is coming out, right, and that part of me is like, oh fuck it, I just wanna, and it's like there's some release that's needed there, and how can I gift that to myself? And like, is it finding a punch bag? Is it going for a run? Is it putting some music on and dancing? And like, how can I keep that light? And I know, you know, that thing about perfectionism or that thing about toeing the line or getting it right, that was such a big deal for me. And I particularly when I started down this path of looking after myself and kind of connecting with my own light work and being in service, I actually came at it from a really masculine perspective of like, I must have a routine, you know, all of that kind of Tim Ferriss stuff or the Dave Asprey stuff or, you know, like the Millionaire Mind or the morning routines, like getting up at 6 and meditating, sitting on the cushion and doing my journaling and, you know, doing all of this stuff and having so much structure to it. And actually that's been so hard for me to maintain and also isn't right for who I am, like how my spirit operates best. And so I do find that now if I give myself a break and go, well, what would make this more fun? How can I turn it into something that actually is a game or that feels really enjoyable or that I'm not doing on my own? Because I feel like that sometimes is actually what I'm seeking is connection.
And I think, you know, sometimes we can replace this stuff. We can replace alcohol and drugs with meditation, gratitude list, exercise. You know, so it's a careful balancing act. It's like, what am I not willing to just sit still and feel?
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes it's just that. It's like, if I sit still long enough and I really feel what's going on for me, and really have to mentally process my journey of life and all the ups and downs I've had and all the things I've done along the way, the people I've let down, the people I've hurt, things I've put myself through. It's grief for me. It's grief and sadness that sometimes I don't want to stop and feel. And I think a big thing that I come up against is that, for me, is that masculine, that toxic masculinity. Oh, you know, big boys don't cry. Grow, come on, man up, all that sort of stuff. And it's like, actually, I think men more than women, I would say, run from grief. They don't want to cry, you know. And I think for me, if I can keep busy, 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 it sort of keeps the grief at bay. And sometimes I have to be a human being, not a human doing. I just have to stop. And so occasionally I do that stuff. When it feels completely unnatural to me to get up and meditate and exercise, I don't. And I don't give myself, beat myself up for it. And I just allow myself to feel what I'm feeling. And for me, over the years, it's primarily been grief that I'm avoiding. You know, sadness around the little boy who was beaten and physically abused, the guy who spent, you know, most of his teenage years locked in a cell for 23 hours a day. All of that stuff, you know, being hurt and abused by the people who you're meant to trust when you're a child, and how that affects me as an adult now when I have intimate moments with my wife and I have little flickers of fear pop up in moments where I should feel completely safe. And how that scared little boy is still with me sometimes. And it's sad. It's sad. I mean, it's sad the effects of that are still with me 37 years later, you know. And it's emotionally responsible for me to not push that boy down into a corner, but to let him out, let him and be with him, be with his sadness, you know. So yeah, I guess that was just, you know.
I really honour the work that you do. I really honour sharing as vulnerably as you just did, and that you continue to do that and sharpen share, because one of the reasons I'm having, like last year and the year before, I had very, very few men on this show. I mostly had women. And then I realised that a lot of the people around me were saying there are no good men, or talking about toxic masculinity and the effects of it. I was like, this is not true in my reality. I'm surrounded by such good men. I'm really fortunate. I must share them with the world. And so, like, whatever I can do to support your mission, or to show up and share, and just to really hear the connection that you have with your little boy, and the willingness you have to communicate that again and again and again, is so important. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And you're doing it. You're supporting right now, you know, having me here, having this conversation. So, you know, I honour you for your work as well.
Thanks. I have a question about 12 steps.
Yeah, sure.
I found the process really unhelpful.
Okay.
Because, so at the beginning, the structure was really great for me. And then there was a part where I felt like it was taking me back to a person I wasn't anymore. Like the idea of when I wrote my book, and it was a hugely cathartic experience, like similarly to you, I had to feel everything again, which was painful and hard and full on. And I did it, and I didn't know why I was doing it. I didn't have a publishing deal. I was like, you know, just spilling it all out. And the first time someone emailed me and said, this book saved my life, thank you, I was like, oh, that's why I went through that process. And I imagine you can relate to that. And after the book was out in the world, I was no longer that woman. Like, there's not a single cell in my body that is that person anymore. And so the idea of reconnecting with that person kind of every day, or to think that I am still her, feels quite disempowering. So I wanted your take on that, because I know that you, do the 12 step and promote it, and I just wondered how you feel about kind of continually going back to the man that you were and maintaining that connection. Does that make sense? Either question?
Yeah, totally. And I think, If it's like a roadmap, isn't it? It's like, okay, if I'm at point A and I'm suffering from addiction or whatever, alcoholism, and I want to get to a place where I'm sober and of service and useful and feel like I've got purpose, it doesn't matter how you get there, really, I don't think. You know, some people take the 12 steps, and I've met lots of people who are hugely successful and happy that have taken other routes. So I think I'm all for anyone taking their own route, you know, and getting there. And, you know, all I have is like what worked for me in the early days, having spent most of my teenage years in a prison cell and then having lots of professional intervention from a young age. And then eventually I went to AA for the first time when I was 18. Didn't work. Was like, I'm too young. This is bullshit. And then eventually, after, you know, battering myself more, I eventually met the right sponsor, a man who was gentle and kind, which is what I really needed. But you never would have guessed that, because I was an angry skinhead with like a fuck you across my forehead, because every interaction I'd had with a man up to that point had been negative. But this really gentle Irish man could see past it, and he guided me through the steps. And it was just like, the 12 steps were important, but I'd say just equally as important was the man who took me through them, because if it had been anyone else, I probably wouldn't have done it. And so that's what works for me. But I got to a point when I was 5 or 6 years sober where meetings and step work didn't work for me anymore. And I had to go deeper, and I had to go and do other work. And, you know, I think for me, it's about being adaptable and knowing, okay, this isn't working for me anymore. And there's a myth in the rooms of AA and NA that if you don't go to meetings, you'll die. And it's just not true. You know, I meet loads of people who are really happy and successful, and they don't go to meetings. Like, I don't go to meetings anymore. I haven't gone to meetings in a long time. I've done 1 or 2 here and there over the past 3 or 4 years, but not how I was in my first 5 years of sobriety. And I'm happy and things are great, you know. So I think, to do full loop on your on it and answer your question, I think for me, all of the answers for me are in the past. If I want to know why something's triggering me now, the answer normally lies in something that's happened back when I was younger. And so, you know, I had to sort of revisit that part of myself and revisit my past. And I often go back there as well, because although it's painful at times, you do find little golden nuggets there as well. And you're able to recycle that painful episode into a piece of gold.
I couldn't agree more. And I also feel like it's really important for people like us, kind of at this point in a journey, to be sharing kind of where you can start, and that there is more. And that, you know, so I continue to look for teachers, I continue to be coached and mentored, and I'm continually seeking to go deeper. And I know that you do too. And that the pieces of my past that I discover in those vulnerable, intimate moments where I'm suddenly having a trauma response. Like you say, like I'm with a partner and it's beautiful, and all of a sudden I'm completely frozen. I'm like, hey, body, what are you doing? Like, and it's so cool, right, to have the tools to be able to separate yourself from the moment, almost step into witness and be kind and like breathe and come back to all the tools that you have, and then almost dive into that past and be like, what happened and what is really going on, and coming at it with curiosity and rather than expectation, and without that kind of shame or idea that there's something wrong with me or that there's something that I'm broken in some way, but instead like really diving into the whole human experience. Like, for me, this is living, this is relationship.
Yeah, 100%. I completely agree. And I think, you know, being a human being for me, and I spent a bit of time in my early days in recovery where I felt like I should feel happy all the time. And I think there's even now some sort of life coaches I come across who are like, you know, happiness is something that should be there every day. And for me, if I'm a full human being, I should be able to feel a full range of emotions of all different intensities. I shouldn't be, you know, blocking out the sadness, blocking out the anger, blocking out the fear, you know, because you don't get to choose what you block out. You block them out, eventually happiness will become boring. So I try and allow myself to feel all of it and just be a human being with a full range of emotions, and just accept, you know, every day isn't going to be, you know, jumping for joy sort of thing, you know, and that's okay, you know. And I think the more comfortable I can get in experiencing these emotions and managing them, the better I'm equipped to help my children manage their emotions. So, yeah, a key thing for me is going back, like when you spoke about that moment when you freeze, is going back to that younger version of yourself and being with them in that moment where they froze, you know. And I've had similar experiences as yourself. And can I be with that young boy who was in that moment was so terrified he froze, and really be with him? And then when I feel comfortable enough, bring that to my wife and say, look, in this beautiful moment, this is what I come up against. And then be held in that moment. And in that is intimacy. You know, I'm bringing all of myself to her. She's not rejecting me. Wow. Maybe that voice in my head isn't true, that if I show her all of me, she'll reject me. And then I experience like real intimacy. And intimacy is another subject. Blimey, I had that confused for years. I thought intimacy was sex. Try and figure that out, eh?
So that's cool. You're not the only one, right? I think we're really that's what we're brought up to believe. And I really hope that that's changing.
Mm.
It feels to me, that the generations after us actually are really wise around this stuff, right? Like, they don't have the same kind of gender roles. They don't have the same expectation. They don't have sex on some kind of weird pedestal in the way that we perhaps did.
Mm, yeah, I agree. And the fact conversations like this are happening is proof that it's changing. I don't think these conversations would have been happening even 10, 15 years ago. You know, there's been a huge shift in the past 5, 10 years. And, you know, we need, in my opinion, more women like yourself. You know, I think the male energy, we've raped and pillaged Mother Earth to the point where we're at now is a fine example of it. And we need, you know, to stop suppressing the feminine energy. We need to support the strong females so they can balance this energy out, because too much masculinity, it's all about power and destruction. And we need the gentleness of the Mother Earth, the feminine energy, to balance it out again, to guide us back to, you know, what we are. And, you know, we're human beings of a planet that we're completely disconnected from, you know. And if we're disconnected from the planet, that means we're also disconnected from ourselves.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like I don't know that I could have had conversations like this 10 years ago, right? I don't know that the idea of unity, or collaboration or co-creation was something that I actually knew how to do. And I feel like as a leader, and I do see myself in that way, you know, I am a leader, I am in the forefront, but that doesn't mean I have a fucking clue what I'm doing these days. And I think that that's really important to share as well, because I'm really open to having these conversations, but I don't go into them with an agenda, with a teach, right? Like, it isn't like, and this is what you should all do next. I don't know. All I know is that we can be present and communicate and check in with our breath and have a conversation. And I feel like if you and I are able to do that and kind of model it in some way, then hopefully someone somewhere will go to their partner and say, hey, can we try and have this conversation? Or, you know, actually, I'm a little bit aware that when we were in that moment, your breath shifted. What's going on for you? And just start these conversations. That would be really cool, right?
Well, you know, it's funny because the Native Americans and the Aboriginal tribes, they would only appoint leaders who didn't want to lead. So if you were waving your hand, let me be in charge, let me be in charge, you wouldn't be appointed. And what they ended up with was humble leaders, vulnerable leaders who were willing to say, I don't have it all figured out, but I am in service to you, the people. And I think what you said just then demonstrates that, is that, you know, look, I don't have all the answers, but, you know, I am here of service to communicate from a vulnerable place and lead the way in a world where lots of people want to have all the answers and have it all figured out. And actually, it's okay to not have it figured out, you know, and we can find a way through together. So I think in years to come, vulnerable leadership will be a quality that will be, hopefully that'll be put on a pedestal, you know, because look, in America, who gets appointed? The guy who shouts the loudest.
Yeah, no, not for long. I'm not even going there. I want to talk about the COP project and kind of where you're at with that and how people, tell me a little bit more and kind of where it started, what you're doing now, and how I can support you, I guess, in sharing this.
Yeah, so when I always had a dream of wanting to move to the country and have a more simple life. And we moved to Devon and I bought 10 acres of land. And I decided I'm going to use this land to help heal some men, because I've done lots of work on myself from lots of different teachings and traditions. And I'm going to combine them all and I'm going to run a retreat for some mates. And so we run a Native American sweat lodge, some breath work, some ice baths, all sorts of other self-development stuff, therapeutic stuff I learned from Clear Mind and Mankind Project. And so I done that back in, I think it was 2018, and it went really well. And then we put on another one the same year, again, it went really well. And last year we put on another two, and it sort of it just developed into this thing that men wanted to come and be healed and do some work. And then on the other side of it, I've always gone into prisons and done these workshops, and I've always gone into schools and colleges and done these workshops and motivational talks. So then I was like, when the book was released, I had stuff all over the place. I had retreats, workshops in prisons, in schools, in colleges. And so I basically combined it all into a company called the CIP Project. CIP stands for Change is Possible. And really what I do is I go in and vulnerably communicate that this is where I was, but this is where I am now. I'm not here as a teacher or as a, like, I'm on a higher pedestal than you. It was like, we're all the same level. And I'm just going to pass on some of these tools that have worked for me. Then they might not work for you. And, you know, it's just turned out that a lot of the stuff I've learned it's done a lot of good, you know. So, so we run workshops in schools, prisons, and on my land here in Devon and in London. We have a few venues in London. So, you know, it's come along, or if you know a school or college that needs it, then come along too. You know, this isn't a money spinning thing. This is like, you know, they're really cheap to come to, and they're not expensive for schools and prisons, but I get a lot from it, because I feel that is my purpose. Is, you know, I feel really in joy when I'm helping people. So, and that's what I think my purpose was. I think the whole reason of my whole life story of going through all that stuff was to make it out the other side and then save some other people's lives. I genuinely think that's what God wants me for.
Yes, I agree. I'm going to put all the links in, and I think the work that you're doing is great. I think, you know what, each person, I have so many people say to me, I can't do that, it's already being done. You know, you must hear that as well, right? Like, people who are on this mission or on the self-development path, they feel like they can't be a coach, or they can't be a leader, or they can't be an artist, or, you know, start whatever they think their purpose is, because it's already being done. And the thing is, there's nobody like you doing it. Mm-hmm. And so your exact history, you know, the things that you went through, the way that you use language, the way that you look, the way that you show up in your energy is going to be absolutely perfect for someone.
Yeah, completely agree.
Yeah, and so I really see that. I loved the One Woman Within project, or One Woman Within, which is similar to the Mankind Project, changed my life, right? Like, before I went into the Woman Within, I was like, why would anyone want female funds? I don't really understand. I'm fine, thanks. I then went and cried for 3 days straight and realized I had no idea how to express joy, that I was really good at grief, really good at sadness, really good at, like, anger even, but found joy tough, really tough. And then also felt really angry for anybody else who could express joy. And it was, opened my eyes to a whole load of stuff. And now I'm able to have deep and intimate relationships with women and men, right? And it's so cool. So I think anyone listening, if you're touched by anything that Michael said, if it feels interesting, please then follow the links and go and check it out and indulge yourself, because actually you're in service to your family and community by healing those wounds and looking at them.
Oh, Ebony, that's beautiful. I honour you for being a, doing women within, being a woman of service, and I just want you to know, if there's anything I can do to support you, let's talk. I've got 10 acres of land here that we use for retreats. So if you ever have a call in at any point to do some work yourself, you can have a chat about this land here, because this is sacred land. I had Native American elders come here and bless my land. So, anyway, that's a conversation for another day.
We will have that conversation without lots of other people listening. Yeah, and same in Spain. If you want to come here, it's this place is kind of cool too.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else you want to share with my people before I wrap it up? Obviously, we'll stick everything in the show notes, make it all really easy for them. Is there anything else you want to share?
There is. There's one thing I want to say. And I want to say, encourage everyone to step up and let their light shine. And really, exactly what you said as well, there's enough room for all of us to shine. And no one can shine the way you can shine. You've got your own individual story and backstory that is going to be just perfect for someone else. So step up and let your light shine. We're at a time in the world where we really need it. So yeah, thanks.
Yeah, go and read Michael's book, read mine. If you're somebody who has felt shame around your childhood or how you started life, found yourself seeking connection through drugs, check both of them out, because they're very, very different stories, but also really powerful for people to read, I think. Thank you for your time.
No worries, Ebony. Keep shining.
This has been Adulting with Ebony. I have been Ebony. You have been great. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening, for sharing, for rating and reviewing. If you have enjoyed this free content, please take a moment to rate us, to share an episode, to spread the word on social media, or to come find me on Instagram and tell me what you thought. On Instagram, I am at Ebony Allard, and I will see you in the DMs. Bye.